calls for an end to mass incarceration and enacting real criminal justice reform grow louder in the state of Florida. Just ahead, we speak with an artist, an ex-offender, and an activist, and take your calls too. Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. We are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher and watch the show video on demand with our partners, TVJax.com. Just ahead, why former inmates are among those leading the charge to reform Florida's prison system. Get on the line now with your thoughts at 549-2937. Then later, why is business just for adults? Find out about Teenpreneur in Jacksonville. A look inside the pages of Florida's new magazine, Flamingo. Then later, don't miss the live and studio performance from the cast of Shipwrecked at Players by the Sea. All of that ahead. But first this hour, the push to end mass incarceration in this country and reform the U.S. criminal justice system. It's a growing consensus that the system needs reform with changes like lowering mandatory minimum sentences that data shows do little or nothing to dissuade criminal behavior. But as Congress dithers over federal reform efforts, at least in part because of the billions in revenue generated by the private business of incarceration, almost every state in the union has been moving ahead to cut its costly prison population down to size. A new report by the Vera Institute of Justice finds that 46 states have adopted at least one measure aimed at steering people away from the prison system. They're also focusing increasingly on social reentry for people coming out of the system, all with the goal of cutting down the $80 billion we spend annually in this country on taking care of nearly 7 million incarcerated or supervised Americans. So where does this leave Florida? Well, we're going to begin the hour this morning with a closer look at this state system as we welcome reform advocate Wendy Tatter of the group Compassionate St. Augustine. Good morning.
Good morning.
And also with us in studio, artist, author, and ex-offender Molière Dimash Jr. Good morning to you. Good to have you on the show. And what are your thoughts and comments about the push to reform the nation's and the state's criminal justice system and the prison system? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/First Coast Connect. Email, tweet us, weigh in on Facebook. And in a moment, Wendy, we'll hear about the efforts of Compassionate St. Augustine around this issue. But first, Molière, let's begin with you. You are 28 years old. You were first sentenced at the age of 19 to 10 years in state prison for stolen goods and a firearm, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
And can you tell us about your experience?
Well, with my regard to experience in prison or just...
Yeah, let's begin there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I started out in Quincy Annex. And while I was in prison, my first priority was to... try to get out. Okay. I went through the whole appellate process, and when I realized it really wasn't feasible, I kind of decided to adapt. So while I was in prison, you know, I spent a lot of time reading and, you know, going through the law and trying to, you know, figure out ways that I can change, because I felt like while I was in prison, I spent a lot more time in prison than I deserved. But being in prison and, you know, observing all things around me, it kind of changed me as a person, because, you know, I saw a lot of violence and I saw a lot of, you know, corruption, the stuff that, you know, you see in the movies. And
like what?
You know, the main thing that stuck out to me was inmate abuse and how it's so systematic. You know what I mean? Like going into the system and knowing that there's an establishment, you would expect people to, you know, follow the rules as they're written, especially the people that's, you know, supervising the prisons. And it was just the complete opposite.
How so? Can you give a specific example?
Well, when it comes to inmate abuse, it's more of a culture as opposed to, you know, just a routine thing that's random. You know, when, like, say there's an instance where there's an allegation of an inmate being aggressive towards a staff member. From what I observed, that was never really the case. And people, that was something that they used as a guise to, you know, to carry out the stuff that I seen, you know. But.
Okay. So you were released after 8 years?
Yes, I was. I was released in April of this year.
And what's your life been like since?
Well, I had a very unusual reentry into society because I was one of the few people that get out of prison, and I actually had some type of system for support. I got out with a plan to actually, you know, attend college and, you know, get my life on the right track. And that was something I was afraid of while I was in there, because I was always wondering, if I get out with nothing, what would that be like? And when I EOS from prison, all I was given was, when they release you, they give you a $50 debit card from JPay and state clothes and a ticket to wherever you're going or wherever you're from, and expect you to begin your life with $50. And that's what I did. When I got out, I got a bus ticket directly to Orlando, which was where I came from. That was the county or the city where the charges originated. And I realized how easy it would be to get caught back up in the same lifestyle that landed me in prison in the first place. You know what I mean? Like, there was a plan, but initially, me landing in Orlando and seeing the same environment that I came from, it was like, okay, there's still the opportunity to break the law. There's still an opportunity to be around the same people I was around. What decision do I make?
Right. And we'll go to your calls as we talk about prison reform and criminal justice reform in Florida and the nation at 549-2937. Wendy Tatter, tell us about your involvement in this issue.
I'm involved because my son went to prison about 7 years ago. And when I started seeing the conditions and the justice system and the way things work for people who are convicted with these long sentences for minor crimes, I realized that I needed to do something about it, and I started looking up things about it. And we have a nation of 2.3 million people are behind bars in this nation, and we have 5% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. So I started thinking something has to be done. And then I got this letter from this guy named Moyer Dimanche, who was in prison, and he had seen that I had a gallery and wondered if I'd be interested in his artwork. And mm-hmm. he started sending me these letters with this teeny tiny little writing and these incredibly intricate pictures drawn in pencil. And I said, yes, I'd be interested in just following up on what he's doing. So we've been writing for almost 4 years now, and I decided that he definitely was not going back to the way it was before, and I started like looking into what he could do when he got out, and that was a major issue because, as he said, he could have gone right back on the streets if there wasn't a backup plan.
Right, and we want your calls about this topic at 549-2937 as we discuss efforts to reform the state's criminal justice system. You are writing a book about the Florida prison system, is that right?
I am.
You've also received a full scholarship from the Florida School of the Arts.
Yes, I did.
For your artwork.
Yes.
You are working to reintegrate into society as the Jacksonville Journey Initiative has focused on these kind of reentry efforts. In your view, having lived this experience, what do you think would be the most positive step Florida could take when it comes to reentry?
It's like I said, it's all about the support system. It's all about having that support system because one of the main issues is actually building confidence that something like this is, you know, actually realistic. You know, without Wendy, I wouldn't have even entertained this kind of stuff. You know, me being a convicted felon, me having a prison history, college would have been the last thing on my mind. And, you know, while I would have, you know, I wouldn't have ruled out actually working and, you know, having a decent life and, you know, living right without breaking the law, but actually, you know, having the motivation to pursue college and, you know, my dreams is being having a career in art, I needed somebody to tell me it was possible. And I needed somebody to tell me, you know, there is a way. Nothing can actually, you know, hold you back. If you feel like you can do it and it's positive, mm-hmm. you know, pursue it. And that was the main part, you know, when Wendy presented these options, it was real simplistic. She was like, why don't you go to college? Why don't you do something with your art? And, you know, by her actually asking those questions, it was like, okay, it's obviously possible.
Right.
Somebody knows that this can actually be done, so let's give it a shot.
And when we look at this Vera report, the Vera Institute of Justice, Wendy, 46 states have experimented with innovations and reform to reduce mass incarceration, to do more to deter crime to begin with, but then when people are incarcerated, to bring them back to full mm-hmm. participation in society in a more productive way.
Exactly.
In your view, how does Florida fall on that spectrum when it comes to these efforts?
Florida is among the lowest. We're third from the bottom. And
why are we third from the bottom?
Because we do still have these mandatory minimums, and we have a felon. It's once a felon, always a felon. When we were trying to get Molero an apartment, it was practically impossible to find him living quarters because he has a felony record. One of the apartment complexes I called, the woman actually cried. She said, a man was in here last week. He had a felony 25 years ago. I begged the complex to let him rent an apartment. He had his own business. He had everything. And he was denied because he had a felony conviction 25 years ago. And this is what's got to be changed. We have to change that law.
And the Ban the Box movement actually had some origins here in mm-hmm. Jacksonville mm-hmm. with Kevin Gay and Operation New Hope. That's the national movement that would no longer require someone to check that box if they had a long ago felony conviction. But anyway, we have a lot of calls. Let's go to your calls. 549-2937. Daryl is in St. Augustine. Hey, Daryl, go ahead.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. It's the same question that I called in earlier when you had Angela Corey and some of the other people that were on speaking about juvenile justice. How much revenue or how is generated by the Justice Department or the prison system by the people they arrest? Your journalist could not answer that question for Duval County. I'm curious about the same question in the for the prison system. I think there is a revenue stream being generated for either private corporations or the Justice Department through the use of either prison labor or through fines and fees. If you want to call somebody in prison, you have to put it on a credit card. You have to buy you have to buy it. You have to pay somebody. If you get arrested, they take your cash and give you back a debit card. Mm-hmm. That debit card, of course, there's a fee associated with it when you use the debit card. So you don't really even get the cash that you came in with back. How much profit or revenue is generated by the people that are arrested or imprisoned? That's my question.
Thank you. Thank you, Daryl, for that. And let's talk about prison privatization in this state and around the nation. Molière, it's my understanding that in Florida, a private prison management company, the GEO Group, was awarded contracts, this was several years ago, worth about $57 million. So there is money to be made when it comes to prison privatization. What are your views about that?
Well, from the perspective of, you know, a prisoner, when I think of a private institution, I'm thinking of those camps have, you know, the reputations for being more comfortable. And, you know, they have different, you know, menus and different opportunities for the inmates and, you know, the way that the prisons are set up. I'm pretty sure that, you know, by privatizing prisons, you know, it's obvious that this whole thing is a business. And, you know, as far as how much money they make, I'm not really, you know, I'm not sure about how that, mm-hmm. you know, that whole thing works. But with private prisons, from, you know, the perspective of inmates is just looked at as, you know, a place that people want to go.
Right. I was going to say
it's
that.
A better place to live
from our perspective
than a state run correctional facility.
That's the general understanding because they have it's all about, I guess, you know, the private institutions they established.
They're a lot more comfortable.
And people that support prison privatization think it's more efficient. Wendy Tatter, as a prison reform advocate, you're opposed to prison privatization.
I'm only opposed because it's not like no one can put a check on what they do and how much they are getting from kickbacks from the laundry or the food or the, you know, all those different things. They're getting contracts from those people and somebody's making money on the prison, so the more beds they fill,
the more bodies in prison, the more money. Yeah.
And, you know, I just know that each prisoner in a state prison costs our taxpayers $30,000 a year. And so it's a huge revenue going out. So we need to...
What you're saying is it doesn't deter incarceration.
I think it encourages as many people incarcerated. The more beds, the better.
Let's go to Greg in Jacksonville. Hi, Greg.
How you doing?
Great. Go ahead.
Yes. I got two questions. My son was 17 when he first went in, and he got out. He's 22 now. He had a job, and something happened on the job. He lost his job. Now he can't find a job. Because of his spelling and record, but that was his first offense. He was a good kid in school. He was a student, and I've never been in trouble. And then they're giving him all this time. For 6 years, he stayed in Clay County for about 4 of the years. And then they sent him off to another prison two more years. Mm-hmm. And then when he got out, he got in this program. They gave him a job. When he got the job now, he lost his job because somebody did something on the job, and the new management came in and seen his record. They let him go. So now he can't find a job. And my other question is that when the judges sentence somebody, do they get something on their pension? Do they get a percentage of that to compensate them?
No, I don't believe so.
Yeah. But thanks for sharing your experience, Greg. The toughest thing ex-offenders, the two toughest things based on what you guys are telling me is when you get out, it's very difficult to find housing and it's very difficult to find employment.
And next to impossible.
Yeah. Here in Jacksonville, organizations like Operation New Hope and Ready for Work have tried to get at those structural problems for ex-offenders. As I mentioned, the Ban the Box movement has looked at this. What else do you think would be a more common sense way to help ex-offenders reintegrate? Because as you said, if employment is not available, most ex-offenders reoffend and go right back into the system way or another.
If there was an easier way for inmates to actually accumulate some kind of funds while they're incarcerated, then that could help. Because, you know, even if it's like a dollar a day or something like that, because we did a lot of work. I was on the road crews. I went out. I cut people's grass. It was all, you know, public grass I was cutting, but I was weed eating. We'd go to the end of a road, and we'd walk for 6-7 miles cutting grass, picking up trash, trimming leaves, holding pole saws and doing all kind of, you know, manual labor. But at the end of the day, we got nothing for it. So if there was a way to, you know, allow us to work over the years and save up money, that would be a start. But I think the main thing is that it's the whole conviction thing that's keeping people from achieving anything once they get out. Because if there was a way to actually make serving time, you know, really and truly allow somebody to pay for their crimes and, you know, pay their dues, then that would be effective. But it's like getting out with a conviction. That's pretty much like you're paying the dues for the rest of your life.
And when you make these arguments in Tallahassee, Wendy, there have been bills put forth in the legislature,
but they
haven't made it through the process. What about the legislature?
The legislature is what everybody out there should be writing to their congresspeople about, lowering mandatory minimums, reinstating felons' rights. But one thing I wanted to talk about is in Maryland, a friend of mine is a judge, and they have a program there called Live In, Work Out. And this is a program that when people are arrested and they're going to a detention center, like, you know, a county jail, they're allowed to keep their job or find a job. And as long as they keep that job, they're paid, they're taken a day is taken off for each day they complete that day of work. And that keeps families together. It keeps the person from losing his job when he goes to prison, to jail. But if they do not complete that day of work, their whole thing is ended and they do go through the criminal process. So diversionary programs are really important. But in jail, there is no reason why people shouldn't be allowed to study. They're not even allowed to take their GED in a lot of places until they're three years from graduating from prison. So if we had education and hopeful things for people to work on while they're in there, instead of just, you know, being told they're hopeless and they're not going to make it.
On top of that, if you have over a certain amount of time, you can't take the programs at all.
Exactly.
Okay. What would you say to those listening, and we'll go to a few more calls in a moment, who might take that much more hardline approach and say, well, if they don't like this system, then they shouldn't have committed the crime in the first place.
Well, that's a really easy thing to say. But what if it's, you know, these people are in there, and do you want them to come out thinking and feeling the way they did when they went in?
You have to think about it. It's called the Department of Corrections.
Right.
There's supposed to be a correction. If you did something wrong, it's not supposed to be the Department of Punishment. Exactly. It would be the Department of Punishment. If that was the agenda, then you know, that would be the name. If we were there to be punished and punished for good, they should change the name at least. You know what I mean? And if it's called corrections, that means the government is giving us the opportunity to not only have them correct. Well, we don't have a choice. That's not really an opportunity, but there's a correction that's supposed to be in place. And we have the option to correct ourselves.
And give people hope instead of feeling
downtrodden. Yeah, because there's no denying that, you know, people, that we broke the law. We made a bad decision, okay? In my case, it was nonviolent, okay? But and at the end of the day, I had plenty of time to sit back and think, okay, you know, not only did, you know, I have a negative effect on society, but, you know, it's just, okay. I got to get myself together.
Let's go to Ann in Arlington. Hi, Ann, you're on the air. Go ahead, Ann.
Hi. Well, we were talking about prisoners that have committed crimes, but of course there are some in there that are innocent. And we do have an innocent project in Tallahassee connected to FSU, and I don't think they get much funding at all. They're overwhelmed with applicants, and I would like to see them getting more funding and donations.
Yeah.
Also, back to privatization of prisons, there's a company called Pride, and they have five businesses going at Union Correctional in Rayford. They make furniture. They make all the license plates or license tags for the state of Florida and three more businesses. And none of the inmates get paid for their labor except those that work in the dental lab. And they get minimum wage for the first 5 years, and 75% of that goes for their room and board to the state of Florida for their cells. And then a friend of mine who works in there spends another $40 for food from the canteen so that he doesn't have constantly have to eat starchy foods. At least from the canteen, he can get a little bit of cheese and a little package of tuna now and then. And he doesn't get decent health care.
That helps.
And he's diabetic. So when he finally gets out, he's afraid his health would have deteriorated so much that he won't be able to get employment for that reason.
All right. So lots of points there, Anne. Anne, thanks for sharing that. And I'm sorry to cut you off. I just want to get at least one more call on the air. Lots of folks waiting on hold. Mel in St. Augustine. Hi, Mel. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. And a shout out to Wendy, who has done an absolutely incredible job. She started talking to different groups around town, and the next thing you know, we have Compassion in Action that meets on a monthly basis that brings in people to talk about what can we do about prison reform, how can we understand what's going on. One of the things that the group has done is to get petitions signed so that felons can get their rights restored. Unfortunately, they didn't get enough petitions for the ballot for 2016.
and they're looking at 2018. But I understand that Alan Grayson now has submitted a bill in Congress to basically restore the rights of felons, the voting rights specifically of felons, that would be take place nationwide, except for people that had performed very violent crimes. So I think, you know, this is an issue we need to all be concerned about, and I love the fact that they are letting people know about the lack of education in the prison system and the lack of payment for the work that is being done there. There's so much that we can do to reform
it. Thank you, Mel. All right. Mollier, your final thoughts.
Well, with regard to reentry, I really think that we need to work on something that could help people not have their records used against them. There has to be some kind of way to where, even if it takes, you know, a couple years to qualify or reach a certain goal, there should be a way that people could, you know, have an option to not have that used against them at least at one time after their first incarceration. And, I want to point out, too, that, they do have reentry programs where you can go to work release and stuff like that.
Sure.
But it requires staying out of trouble and not getting DRs. And, you know, that's a whole different game of politics when it comes to, you know, staying out of trouble and having personal problems
right.
with correctional officers. And that was, you know, a problem that I faced because, my whole thing was addressing something completely different, you know, that was going on within the prison system. And that kept me in a lot of trouble, you know, with regard to the abuse and stuff like that. So I couldn't really go. And, you mentioned the book that I'm writing earlier. It's called It Takes a Criminal to Know One. And, you know, that was my approach on what I saw, you know. It's my interpretation. It's completed. We're working on, you know.
We're looking for a publisher.
Yes. We're working on getting
I'm sure it'll be an interesting read.
Yes.
And to be clear, there are reentry programs in Jacksonville. There are several, actually, mm-hmm. Through the official system, through the Jacksonville Journey. There's Operation New Hope. There are programs I think it's been insightful to have you both on the show. Wendy Tatter, where does your organization go from here?
Well, what I'd like everyone to understand is that people who don't have a loved one or someone they know in prison, you have to understand that it is a big issue for everyone. It's a drain on our monetary system, and it's a drain on our economy, on our social interactions. Everyone is involved, and we need to... Everyone needs to address this issue.
Thank you both so much for being with us.
Thank you.
We were joined by prison reform advocate Wendy Tatter and artist, author, and ex-offender Mollier Demanche Jr.
And
more still ahead. Sorry. Later in the hour, the cast of Shipwrecked at Players by the Sea with their in-studio performance. Teentrepreneur is coming to town. We'll tell you about that. And flipping through the pages of Flamingo Magazine's summer issue. It's a look all around the state. We'll be right back.
Guns go off. That's just what they do.
That phrase, melancholy accident, just jumped out at me. And as I continued to read the papers, I saw it mentioned again and again. And it turned out this was a genre of journalism early in American history.
Two centuries of coverage of the little melancholy consequences of gun accidents in America. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI, Public Radio International. Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Ray Hollister.
I'm Tom Braun.
And we're the guys from Deemable Tech.
Hey, if you've got a question about your computer, mobile phone, tablet, or the internet...
And who doesn't?
We're here to help.
Join us Thursdays during Morning Edition and All Things Considered here on WJCT.
And check out our podcast online at deemable.com.
That's deemable.com.
For everyone discovering life after 50, WJCT proudly presents Next Avenue, the website where grown-ups keep growing. Visit us at wjct.org/nextavenue. It's today's modern guide for adulthood, part two, sponsored in part by AARP, Real Possibilities.
Welcome back. Well, the first ever Teenpreneur Conference is coming up in Jacksonville next week because business isn't just for adults. This is for teenagers who have started their own business or want to. Eva Baker, founder of Teenpreneur Conference, is here with a preview, and you're just out of your teens, the ripe old age of 20, and you already have your own business. Amazing. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Are you a product of the local school system, by the way?
No, I was actually homeschooled all the way through high school.
Oh, and in high school, you founded your own business.
Yes, I started a website that is all about personal finance for teens. So I blog about things like how to get a great part-time job, how to budget, how to save, things like that.
It's called Teens Got Sense.
Yes.
I'm going to have my daughters look at that as soon as possible. But in so doing this, in starting a business, you decided that more teens need to do the same thing.
Yes. You know, teen entrepreneurship is really something that's kind of up and coming. There are so many teens out there that are starting their own business because they can't get a summer job and they just need to make some extra money. And so there are so many of us out there. But as I've been talking to teen entrepreneurs all over the country, one of the most common themes is that we all feel very isolated. Even though there are a lot of us, we feel like we're the only ones in our community
really
doing this. And so that is what I want to provide at my conference, is a place where we can all come together and support each other and help each other out.
According to the Harvard Business Review, the post-millennial generation, known as Generation Z, is trying to get a leg up on the competitive college market, as you said, earn extra money. And this is a growing trend. What do you think it is about your generation, Generation Z, which I just learned that's your generation's moniker? Why is your generation so entrepreneurial, do you think?
Well, I think one of the biggest things that I've seen is it is so hard for a teen to get a part-time job. I spent 2 months last summer job hunting and putting out my resume and applying for jobs, and it was really difficult. And I think a lot of teens are struggling with this, especially in the summer when everyone else is trying to get a job too. And so they are turning to entrepreneurship and starting their own business as a way to earn extra cash.
With all of that said, teens will be coming out in droves for the Teenpreneur Conference in Jacksonville. Tell us what's going to be happening.
So I have teen speakers flying in from all over the country and over the world, actually. I have a young man flying in from the UK to come and speak at the conference. They're all experienced entrepreneurs, have all run businesses themselves, and they're coming just to share their knowledge. So we're going to have classes about, you know, how to write out a business model, how to use social media effectively, how to communicate well with your customers, and all of those kinds of things that you need to know to be able to run a business successfully.
This is incredible, and this is the first ever such conference of its kind. This is happening not this weekend, but next weekend, June 10th and 11th.
Yes.
At the Embassy Suites, is that right?
Yes.
And the website is theteenpreneur.com, theteenpreneur.com, with teen business leaders from all over the country and even around the world coming to Jacksonville. Register now online, or you can go through Eventbrite to get your tickets for the 2016 Teenpreneur Conference in Jacksonville, Florida. Eva Baker contributing to the startup culture right here in this city and leading the way. I'm so pleased to meet you, and I'm sure you're going to do many great things in your future. I'm so glad to have you on the program. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Again, that website is theteenpreneur.com, and that conference is next weekend in Jacksonville. We'll be right back.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, in countries across Europe, right-wing and nationalist political parties are showing signs of growing popularity. What these groups stand for, their appeal to today's voters, and how they're reshaping the political landscape.
Weekday mornings at 10 on 89.9.
WJCT's Great Auction is where you'll find over 300 items, most starting at 75% off at auction.wjct.org. Packages include lodging, attractions, dining, recreation, beauty, and more. The bidding begins June 2nd and continues through June 13th. Log on to auction.wjct.org for more information.
Welcome back. Well, it's the first day of June. Hurricane season officially kicks off today, but you can take your mind off those potential summer storms by picking up the new summer issue of Flamingo Magazine. It's published right here in our area, but it's on sale today all around the state. Publisher Jamie Rich is here now with a look inside the pages of Flamingo, and it's so good to see you. Good morning.
Good morning, Melissa. How are you?
I'm great. And this is a brand new magazine you debuted from your offices out in Ponte Vedra, statewide distribution. A great idea to celebrate the culture and everything happening all around Florida. And what a better name than Flamingo, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you. It just really typifies what Florida is. It's fun, it's iconic, and everyone associates flamingos with Florida. And who doesn't smile when they hear that word or that name? So it just felt perfect. But yeah, we started in the spring with our first issue. Before Flamingo came along, there was no magazine for the state of Florida. There's a business magazine, Florida Trend, but there was really nothing for Floridians to be unified in terms of lifestyle and culture. So that's really what we're trying to do.
And that's a big undertaking considering it's a huge, diverse state. Different corners of the state can have their own cultures, their own idiosyncrasies. You're trying to capture all of it.
We are. And I think there's narrative threads that run throughout the whole state, whether you're in Pensacola, Key West, Sarasota, Cocoa Beach, Jacksonville. We all have different diverse communities and geographies, but really we all have being Floridians in common. So whether you're a transplant to the state or you are a fifth generation Floridian, there's something for you in the magazine.
The summer issue is on newsstands today. People can look for it in major retailers and grocery stores. What's inside the summer issue?
Well, it's our travel issue, and we have a lot of stories that will hopefully inspire Floridians to go out and experience the state in a new way, look at landscapes in a new way. We have a fascinating story on the Florida Panther by Craig Pittman, and really goes into the history and the story of how the Florida Panther was nearly extinct and how the state brought them back, and now they are really thriving. But there's still some concerns that they face and some problems with development across the state. So it's a really complicated, fascinating story. It's one of my favorites. There's also a fascinating story on the springs and just how beautiful they are, how you can enjoy the springs all throughout Central and North Florida, but mm-hmm. also the conservation issues that they face. So they're travel stories to inspire you to go out and experience the state, but also to know what's really happening after you've had your fun.
Sure. And as you said, you've got a statewide focus, but is there anything inside the new issue that's specific to North Florida that might catch people's eye?
Yes. Well, we have two separate sections that really try to canvas the entire state. We have an events section, and that's called The Tide. And we also have a new opening section called Just Hatched. And in each of those sections, we break it down North, Central, and South Florida. So for North Florida, we have in The Tide, actually this weekend, we've highlighted the Rendezvous Film Festival happening in Amelia Island. So
nice.
Readers can check that out. And essentially, these are events that we've carefully selected around the state that would be worth traveling to. So if you live in Pensacola, we think it's worth your while to drive over to Amelia Island to check out the Rendezvous Film Festival. Locally, we've also highlighted in our Just Hatch section new restaurants, and one of those is Safe Harbor out at the beach.
Oh, right. Yeah.
So hopefully readers can...
I need to get over there.
Yeah, it's delicious.
Yeah.
It's beautiful and delicious. So these are the types of things we've highlighted in our area. And you know, just readers should take a look and see what they can do in North Florida, but also if they're going to get out and travel across the state this summer, like we know they will, there's other great things happening from Miami to Tampa and all points in between.
How much fun to actually launch a magazine, as you said. This is never, as far as we can tell, has never been done in Florida before.
It's really interesting.
Kudos.
Thank you very much. It's interesting that there isn't that touch point for people, but that's what we've tried to do. We think of it as more than a magazine, but more of a movement and something that will unify people. It will give them that destination for all great Florida stories, and it will also inspire them to go out and do new things, look at the state in a new way, and just get out of their communities, get out of their bubbles, because we can all get kind of trapped in what we're doing in our area and not really realize the opportunities that there are across the state and how rich they are.
Excellent. Well, it is The New Flamingo on sale on newsstands today, the summer issue, a statewide magazine, but it's published right here in our corner of the state. Publisher Jamie Rich. So good to see you.
So good to see you, Melissa.
Thanks for being with us.
I would just add, too, people can subscribe from flamingomag.com. And the stores that they can find the magazine range from Whole Foods, Publix, now Target, Winn-Dixie, and locally Native Sun in town, and also Earth Fair.
Very nice. It's probably not easy to get that level of distribution, so kudos again.
Thank you very much, Melissa.
And we'll be right back with a live in-studio performance from the cast of Shipwrecked at Players by the Sea.
Hedge funds, it turns out, are just like everybody else.
They want a relationship with power brokers in Washington who can help grease the skids on their agenda.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the politics of hedge fund economics, the numbers from Wall Street, and the rest of the day's business news, all next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Chasing the Dream, Poverty and Opportunity in America is a multi-platform public media initiative that provides a deeper understanding of the impact of poverty on American society. Tune in to the PBS NewsHour weeknights at 7 on WJCT-TV for compelling stories of individuals and organizations addressing such issues. And log on to chasingthedreamproject.org. Funding for this initiative is provided by the JPB Foundation and Ford Foundation. Local funding provided by Wells Fargo.
There is no such thing as old music, just music you haven't heard before. Enjoy the best music ever recorded on Relax Radio every night at midnight, only on 89.9 FM WJCT.
Gosh, I'm lucky I've got beginner's love. There never was such a smile or such eyes of blue. Gosh, I'm fortunate the thing we've been.
Welcome back. Well, finally this hour, it's an imaginative, colorful, and family-friendly comedy. Shipwrecked and Entertainment is opening this weekend at Players by the Sea. Here with more about the show and to perform a preview from the production, we welcome cast members Matt Tompkins, Casey Walters, and Tamara Arapovic. Good morning, cast.
Morning.
Good morning.
Good to see you.
Nice to see you.
Let's begin with you, Matt. Shipwrecked is about an actual person who turned up in Victorian-era London telling fantastic tales of a pearl fishing expedition to the South Pacific.
Yes. The man's name is Louis de Rougemont. He grew up in London most of his life and was gone for almost 30 years. He returns and claims that he has this fantastic story of how he was stranded on an island for 2.5 years, lived among a tribe of Aborigines, became their chief, and he returns and writes all his stories for an actual magazine, Wide World Magazine, and presents his story even to a group of scientists.
Uh-huh.
And they all claim that this entire story is a lie.
Uh-huh.
That everything
they're
that
not buying it.
Yeah, they're not buying any of it. He rides sea turtles. He fights a giant octopus. And these are all things that, well, Louis himself, back then, this actually, he said that these things actually happened. He's a real person. And he was able to actually fool all of England.
Oh, they eventually believed the story.
They believed this story. Even the Queen, Queen Victoria, believed that this was an actual thing that happened.
He told them he was on a deserted island. Mm-hmm. He married an Aborigine princess. That mm-hmm. there was an actual shipwreck. Casey, Tamara, who do you both play in the show?
We both actually play numerous characters.
Numerous characters.
Yes. So okay. For instance, I play his mother. Yamba, the Aborigine princess, Captain Jensen, and various other characters.
And so right now, you're going to perform a scene from Shipwrecked, is that
yes.
right?
Yes.
What scene are we going to enjoy here?
It's sort of bits and pieces. It's a bit of the introduction, the prologue, as well as bits of when Louis sort of prints his story and has it distributed through London.
And again, so people understand, this actually did happen. This is a true story.
This is a true
from
story.
Victorian era London. Okay, here it is, a scene from Shipwrecked.
Greetings, you vital, hummingbird-hearted creatures. Hello and welcome to this temple of the imagination, this hallowed hall where stories are told. Allow me to introduce myself. My name, dear audience, is Louis de Rougemont. Well, aren't you clever? You are quite right. It is French. Rouge meaning red and mont, mountain. Louis of the Red Mountain at your service. Are you ready to be astonished? Well, are you? Oh, good, good. You've come to the right place. My assistants at today's proceedings, Miss Casey Walters and Mrs. Tamara Arapovic. Hush now, for I am about to tell you a story. A fantastic and amazing story. A story all the more remarkable because every word of it is true. That's right. Every word. And how do I know? Well, because I lived it, dear ones.
Now, what it needs is a smart title. One that grabs the public by its throat and doesn't let go. Let's think.
Oh, how about My Story by Louis de Rougemont?
Too bland. It's got to be something sensational that catches the eye and quickens the pulse. Think again.
Oh, my 30 years in the Australian outback.
No, no, no. Too academic. Mm. The object is to sell magazines.
Mm. Oh, I've got it.
No, I've got it. Shipwrecked. The amazing adventures of Louis de Rougemont, as told by himself.
Perfect.
Wide world. Get your wide world. True is stranger than fiction. Shipwrecked. Amazing true life adventures of castaway, lived among cannibals, survived 30 years in outback. Read all about it. Wide world, mister?
Yeah, give me one of those.
Here you go, sir.
I'll take one, boy. I'll take two. One for my nephew. Give me one. Me too. And me.
The series proves to be so popular.
Sorry, mister. I'm all out.
Rats, now I want it even more.
Demand is so great. The second week's printing is increased from 10,000 copies to 20,000. By the third week, 50,000. I am a man of the moment. The talk of the town.
Oh, the valor of this man.
The hardship.
The adversity.
I was quite moved when he fell in love with that Aborigine girl.
Yes.
Yamba, I believe her name was.
Yes. Yamba. Oh, That dare savage.
Yes, quite.
Week number 6, circulation 200,000. Not an extra copy can be found in all of London. My likeness appears everywhere. I can no longer go for a stroll without being recognized.
Bravo! It's Shipwrecked, an entertainment at Players by the Sea. That's a little preview of this incredible new show. Family-friendly show, by the way. Kudos, cast.
Give yourselves a hand. Thank you.
Get your tickets now for Shipwrecked and Entertainment, debuting this Friday at Players by the Sea. Tickets at playersbythesea.org. Cast members Matt Tompkins, Casey Walters, Tamara Arapovic. Thanks for being here.
Thank you very much.
Break a leg.
Thank you.
And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. Michelle Corum is running the board for us this morning. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony's Pyotr Chevchik, with podcasts at iTunes and Stitcher and video on demand at our partner tvjax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, in countries across Europe, right-wing and nationalist political parties are showing signs of growing popularity. What these groups stand for, their appeal to today's voters, and how they're reshaping the political landscape. That's coming up next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.